Before the fire alarm starts, we wanted to remind everybody, or let everyone know that there's going to be a fire alarm here in the building. Hopefully, the alarms don't go off too long, and then we'll get started right after that's over. So if you're wondering why we're waiting a little bit, we're listening to fire alarms. Alarms are still going off, so I'm sure you can hear it now. We're going to give it a few more minutes. Hopefully, it'll go off soon.
So I don't know if the alarms are still going on, but I think we can probably still move forward with a lot of the agenda while they're still doing that. So Carrie, if you can hear us, if we could go ahead and do a roll call, and if not, we will skip and move to some of the other stuff.
Sure. Whenever I announce your name, if you could please say present. So Jonathan Sebaking. Rick Wilson.
Jonathan's here, and so am I. He is a long distance remote, may not have a microphone.
Okay, I can see him on here. Yep. Carrie Carmony George.
Present.
Matthew Bullock.
Present.
Jared Peterson.
Present.
Jared, where are you from?
I work for NDOT.
Okay, awesome. Welcome. Sean Hayden.
I'm here.
Chris Gentry.
Present.
Nate Hahn.
I'm present.
Karen Brooks. Michelle Christian. And I'm going to go through the people who are here that are present. Matt Schrafer.
Present.
Pam Drock.
Present.
Aaron Schrafer.
Present.
Brooke Forbeck.
Present.
Is there anyone that I've missed? I have a call-in user number 2 online.
Cinda Phillips with the Arc of Evansville, present.
Okay. Thank you. Can you just announce your name one more time? The alarms are a little loud here. So.
Cinda Phillips with the Arc of Evansville.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think we have everyone.
Thank you, Carrie. And from my perspective, I don't hear any alarms. I don't know what anyone else online does, but that bodes well for us, but also we don't know what you guys can hear from us. So thank you for that. I'm actually going to reverse those of you who got the agenda. I'm going to start with the approval of minutes. So we had minutes have been circulated. Any comments, revisions? If not, we'd entertain a motion to approve.
Move to accept the minutes as presented.
Matthew Bullock, I'll second.
Thank you. We have a motion from Rick and a second from Matthew. All those in favor, signify with aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, it passes. So the item number 2, since we reversed those, we have an opportunity to elect a vice chair. So those of you who are aware, Greg Waltham has chaired this for, I don't know, we'll go with at least a few years. His retirement is kind of shifted things a little bit. So we have an opening for vice chair. If someone would like to nominate themselves or someone else that's been active on the committee, we would entertain nominations for office for a vice chair. I promise it's not a lot of work, and I attend most of the meetings, so yeah, I take care of most things for you. Carrie, do we technically have to have one?
I believe we're supposed to, according to our bylaws.
Hey, I'll step up. It's Rick.
Well, thank you, Rick. I appreciate that.
Yes, sir.
Do we have, is anyone else interested that would like to run against Rick? If not, can I get a motion for Rick Wilson to step in the position of the vice chair?
Matthew Bullock, I'll move.
Thank you, Matthew. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
I'm sorry, who's with the second?
think there might have been two of us, but Sean said it as well.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor, signify with an aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. Well, thank you, Rick, and you and I can just have some time to have a short little conversation, but I promise it's not labor intensive, which is nice in our world. So thank you for that. We have a presentation for the group. And
so the presentation, could you let us know who first and second? Rick's, please, we were, the sheriff just came in, so we got distracted. So for the minutes, thank you.
So Matthew Bullock moved to electric and Sean seconded it.
Correct.
Great, thank you.
Not a problem. Okay, presentation time.
Hi, and we have invited Nicole Chandler. She is a student at IU. She's getting her dual master's in public affairs and environmental science. This summer, she came here. She was an intern from the McKinney Climate Fields Program. Oh, it finally stopped. She looked at climate change and resiliency for the Evansville MPO area. So she's put together a presentation kind of summarizing that. So Nicole, go ahead. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you all for taking your time out of the day to listen to this presentation. I hope it's informative and hopefully we can all get something out of it. If at any point you can't hear me, please let me know and I will speak louder. But in terms of respecting all your time, I will get going. So I'm going to share my screen and go to my presentation. And if at any point you have any questions or anything, you can put it in the chat box or I can answer them at the end. And we will get started. So like Brooke said, my name is Nicole Chandler. I'm very excited to be here doing this presentation today. What we're going to be talking about is the Evansville MPO region and going to be looking at climate stressors, risks, and adaptations that we can take as a community. So, it's not wanting to work. There we go. All righty. So for the agenda, we're going to look at current U.S. climate change predictions and trends. Then we're going to zero into the EMPO regional climate stressors. Then we'll look at climate risks to transportation specifically, and then ways that we can adapt to those risks. And there's some citations at the end, and we can answer any questions that anyone might have. So I'm not going to insult anyone's intelligence by reading directly from the slides. I would like to pull your attention to the graphs. I think they speak very well for themselves. The top left graph here shows the difference in average temperatures starting from 1880 all the way up to 2020 for the United States. So we can see at about 1970, there's a steady uptick and in, increase in average temperatures. And then the bottom left graph here, I would like to pull your attention to this is U.S. greenhouse gas emissions by economic sector. And right now, the transportation sector is one of the largest greenhouse gas emitters contributing to climate change. So I think it's very interesting, you know, that working in the transportation sector, we have a really great opportunity to help mitigate some of those impacts. And so currently, the 10 warmest years on record have occurred since 2005. Some people may have noticed that just anecdotally with summers getting hotter. And something that we've seen and the research has shown is that greenhouse gases are becoming more efficient at trapping heat. So 49% more heat was trapped in the atmosphere in 2021 than was trapped in 1990. And these impacts that we're seeing from increased temperatures in the atmosphere will continue into the next century. We'll see things like average temperatures and changes in seasons, changes in precipitation regimes, more frequent and intense extreme weather events. And a report from NPR shows that for the United States, there's about an estimated cost of $2 trillion annually from lack of climate inaction. So going forward, let's look at what the EMPO region will be facing. So Currently, average temperatures have risen approximately 2 degrees Fahrenheit since the 1960s. And one thing that I would really like to pull your attention to is that by 2050, there's an estimated 38 to 51 extremely hot days per year for Indiana. And as a reference, the average that the past has been 7 days annually. So that's a pretty big increase in extremely hot days per year. And especially, I would like to pull your attention to this bottom right figure that shows the summer and winter analog for the state of Indiana and what our projections for climate change and heat will look like. So if we're on a moderate or high emissions pathway by 2050 and 2080, we can see different changes. So with a medium, moderate emissions pathway by 2050, we could see a climate that is more adapted to summer to something that's similar to like Mississippi. But by 2080 on a high emissions pathway, we could see temperatures that are closer to South Texas, for example, for the state, which I think, you know, can be kind of jarring sometimes. And overall, extreme cold events, so days with a temperature of less than 0 degrees Fahrenheit, are declining. Sorry, my PowerPoint is not wanting to work very well. And so these are some figures for Kentucky specifically, but overall what we're seeing with these climate change impacts are that summers are expected to get warmer and drier, which can further impact droughts, make droughts more intense and last longer. And especially with heat waves, urban heat waves are becoming a thing that we've seen in the news. For example, if anyone saw the Courier and Press article that came out this morning, I believe, about warmer temperatures for Evansville, that's something that we're going to need to be addressing and looking at in the future. This graph here on the, this figure here on the right is really helpful at looking at Henderson County and what their changes in mean temperature for the different seasons will be. So the bottom left part of the figure shows Henderson County during summer, and we're seeing about a change in almost 7 degrees Fahrenheit for the county. And another impact that we're going to be seeing that's going to be really important to the transportation sector in general is precipitation. So we have seen the trends and the projections are more frequent heavy downpour events, and more precipitation is anticipated for winter and spring with less in the summer overall. Since the 2000s, average annual precipitation has increased, and pulling a current event that just happened, all the flooding that happened over the summer in Kentucky, you know, has kind of shown how these frequent intense downpour events can have a big impact to infrastructure. The bottom left figure here shows too for the state of Indiana that our annual average precipitation has increased by 6 inches. So that's a pretty big increase. And down here on the bottom right figure, we can see the changes in the seasons for Henderson. So looking at winter and spring precipitation, we can see an increase, while down here in the summertime, we can see a decrease in precipitation. So at the end of the day, what does this mean for transportation and the EMPO region? The potential for rutting of roads, pathways, and sidewalks due to high temperature is high. I don't know if you all kept up with some of the news events that were coming out of Portland during the heat wave a couple years ago. Their roads were buckling because they just had not prepared for extreme heat that they were getting. Things like changes in timing and length of road construction and the seasons can increase, which can increase costs due to delays from heat or from precipitation. Increased heat and increased precipitation can reduce the lifespan of pavement and also put increased stress on vehicles, roads, bridges, the infrastructure in general. And these can lead to things such as disruptions in supply chains, or also the failure of utility or utility services and electrical grids. And another important part, especially when it comes to precipitation, is the potential for washout of roads, flooding of sewer systems, delays in public transit, and erosion or soil loss due to flash flooding. And so these are a couple examples. This bottom right picture shows a washout of a rural road, but that could have a huge disruption And I'm sure that everyone's seen this picture here on the bottom left of flooding in Evansville. And so, you know, what are some ways that we can combat these impacts that we're going to be seeing in the future and already are starting to see, in fact? So one of the things that we can do is to create and implement sustainability and resiliency policies within what we do here at the EMPO and other regional agencies as well. We can identify locations to install EV charging stations and utilize renewable resources. Things like the infrastructure bill that was just passed would be helpful in promoting things like that. Converting city and public transit vehicles to EVs is a really great way to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, which then can help reduce climate change impacts. Things like encouraging use of public transit by making it more affordable, efficient, and attractive to users can really help reduce those impacts as well. And something that is kind of a low-hanging fruit, but that is a very helpful way, is encouraging and promoting the use of high albedo materials for roads, sidewalks, parking lots, and pathways. So high albedo materials reflect sunlight and reflect heat back into the atmosphere. So for example, if you have a parking lot that is made of dark material, that heat will be trapped in that parking lot, and that can really further exacerbate things like urban heat islands and things like that. And then increasing the availability and accessibility to bicycle and pedestrian facilities and encouraging carpooling are ways to reduce the risk for transportation by a lot of these things is reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And an example of something the EMPO has already been working on is the road diet in Warwick County. Well, not the EMPO, but things that have been done are the road diet in Warwick County here that offers multimodal modes of transportation. And so some other ways too that we can address more of the stormwater and rainwater precipitation impacts are utilizing future projections for rainfall and stormwater management design. So we see a lot of urban flooding, and a lot of this is not exclusive to the EMPO region, this is across the country. A lot of stormwater management designs are just not made for the increase in the frequent heavy downpour events that are starting to occur. We can also do things like implement sustainable and resiliency practices and programs into city planning and transportation and city services. And that's the opportunity there, is that opportunities are wide. It's not a one size fits all method. And we can also do things like utilize and promote green infrastructure design. So strategic urban forestry and effective green spaces to help mitigate flooding in urban areas where there's a lot of impervious surfaces, such as roads, sidewalks, concrete, things like that. Another way that we can help reduce flooding is to plant and maintain rain gardens in areas with impervious surfaces to reduce flooding. So for example, on Walnut Street, this is a really good example of a rain garden that can help reduce urban flooding and kind of take the burden off of the stormwater design management. And also another easy way is to promote and encourage use of rain barrels and cisterns to help mitigate stormwater and flooding impacts that we're seeing. So I know I flew through that pretty quickly, and that was a lot of information all thrown at you at once, but I really wanted to respect your time. But are there any questions that anyone has, any comments, things like that? This is a pretty quick and not at all comprehensive PowerPoint of what we're going to be facing in the region, and I will stop sharing to answer any questions we have.
Nicole, are you sharing the same type of presentation with city and county engineers and obviously people outside just the MPO?
Yeah, I haven't gotten that far in terms of sharing that information. We have spoken to a county engineer, and there is talks of putting this presentation out further, because this for sure is going to need to be a multi-agency way to address these impacts. And so right now that's kind of in the works of like developing this presentation or even a document or something and sending that out to wider agencies to get that information out there and what some of the impacts and strategies to address those impacts could be.
Yeah, I think the water or the increased precipitation, make sure we're sizing you know, pipes and such accordingly is key for the future. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
Anyone else questions for Nicole? Okay.
This is James Mosley. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. Great presentation, Nicole. Is there any way we will have access to that PowerPoint?
Yeah, of course. I have sent the PowerPoint to everyone at the EMPO, but I can also send it directly to you if anyone wants to put their emails in the chat. And I believe that EMPO staff, please correct me if I'm wrong, there was talks of potentially putting this presentation on the EMPO website as well, too. But yes, any of this information, we would definitely love to get out there, put it out there. So anyone who would like access to it, please let me know. Please let the EMPO staff know, because we can get that out there for you for sure.
And one quick comment. I think you made some very salient points, particularly where asphalt is retaining heat more effectively, particularly in the inner city areas, and how that creates heat islands, and to the extent to where green infrastructure or complete streets with tree canopies can aid and assist in taking those gas, carbon monoxide, and also provide shade and cooling out those areas that are sorely missing, and particularly in the center city area. Thank you.
Yes, no, thank you so much for that comment, James. That is a huge issue that's really starting to occur, and the impacts, the health impacts from urban heat islands are very salient, very important to understand and address. And I think you made great points with complete streets and urban forestry and green spaces can really help combat that. And I think there's been a lot of discussion too during my time at the EMPO as an intern, where we had a lot of those discussions of ways to address that. And you know, it'll be a multi-agency, multi-community addressment to make sure that that's being addressed properly and fully. But yes, no, thank you for that input. That was great.
Thank you.
We'll make sure that the presentation is part of the meeting minutes when that gets sent out.
Great.
Any other questions for Nicole? Thank you again, and yes, excellent presentation. So we appreciate that. Moving on, project update. I assume Pam's doing that.
Yes, I am. We'll start with the City of Evansville projects, Walnut Street Phase 3. This project is preparing for construction. 7 parcels of right-of-way have been secured at this point in time, and they're working on getting appraisals and contacting the property owners and getting the other properties secured on their way to construction for that project. Vanderburgh County, Oak Hill Road from Lynch Road to St. George. Work is continuing on the design, right-of-way engineering, utility coordination, and on the environmental documents. So basically the project is in process and moving forward. Warrick County project, Epworth Road. Notice to proceed with preliminary engineering was given to the consultants on July 26th. Of 2022, so they'll begin work on design. Moving over to Kentucky, Green River Road sidewalk project, 12 of the 15 parcels are secured on that project. And then Wathen Lane, 15 of the 18 parcels are secured and utility plans are complete. For the Kentucky transportation led projects, Watson Lane, appraisal activities are under contract and appraisals should be ready in a couple of months with offers to the property owners to be sent after that. And utilities are working on the utility plans for submittal to the designer so that they can incorporate that into the plans. The US 60 Spotsville Bridge, the bridge was open to traffic on August 23rd. Kentucky 2084 and Airline Road, or Kentucky 812, the project construction is complete, pending some minor corrective work on that contract. And those are all of the project updates that I have.
Okay, and so for the NDOT side of things, I made some changes to the spreadsheet, and I pretty well went through and added every project in Vandenberg and Warrick County. So the list got quite a bit longer. And then within the contracts, I've added what we call KINDESs, or baby DESs, which are not the lead DES, but projects within that contract. So there's a little more detail to the spreadsheet, and it's quite a bit longer. I am only going to read a couple of the updates, but we'll start with B40541, which is two bridge replacements on 68. And we had a pre-construction meeting on August 15th, and construction will start soon. B42643, that's I-69 over Baseline Road. They're doing bridge maintenance and repair. The project was awarded on the August letting to Ram Construction Services of Michigan for $297,000. To skip down, B39367, which is I-64 over Plum Creek. Those are superstructure replacement projects. We revised the maintenance of traffic from a crossover to phase construction, and we're working on updating the plans. B42876, this is a US 41 pedestrian bridge at Washington Avenue at Bosse High School, and also an intersection improvement, a median U-turn on 41 at Washington. They're working, the environmental document was submitted for final review. R42753, these are small structure pipeliners and pavement restorations on I-69 and State Road 57. We received the stage three submittal, and we revised some of the pavement design patching and joint work quantities. And we're working through the environmental document and determining what permits are needed. And then R42287, which is the large project on the Lloyd Expressway, the Lloyd for You. It's several intersections, several bridges, and two road reconstructions. And we had the second round of traffic management plan meetings, and those were held on the 18th and 19th of August. So there's quite a few updates on here. Anything that's bold and italicized are new updates each month or each quarter. Any questions about anything?
Any questions for Matthew or for Pam? If not, we'll move on to new business. 2022 call for projects. Erin.
Yep, thanks. In July, we sent out a call for projects for funding to our LPAs. That funding was for fiscal years 25 and beyond for Kentucky LPAs and fiscal years 28 and beyond for Indiana. We received two applications back. We reviewed the applications and went through our prioritization process on those two projects, and they both are eligible for funding, with the caveat for one that I'll get to in a second. The first project that we received was from Warrick County. It is Oak Grove Road Phase 4, which would be State Road 261 to Anderson Road. They are wanting to continue on the cross section that they've been working on the last several years, where the project would add a left turn lanes at major intersections, including they would have space then for bike lanes on both sides of the street and a sidewalk on one side that would tie into the existing Oak Grove phases. And of course, the drainage, curb and gutter, storm sewers, all of that stuff would be improved with this project. The federal funding is estimated to be just over $8 million for this project. The only thing about this project right now is, as it stands, that phase of Oak Grove Road is currently classified as a local road. Projects have to be classified as a major collector or higher to be eligible for federal funding. The MPO will be working with the county and to submit a request to NDOT to have this section looked at to have it reclassified based on some of the new developments and things that are coming out to that area. And if NDOT approves that reclassification, then it will be eligible to move forward with federal funds. The second project is Vanderburgh County, Wimberg Road Bridge 2430 replacement. It's the bridge that's just east of St. Joe Avenue. They are wanting to replace that existing bridge with a new concrete beam structure, and that is looking to be just over $3 million. If the technical committee approves these projects for funding, that the years that they will be placed in, that will be decided as part of the TIP, the upcoming TIP process. If you have any questions on these, I can try to take those. If not, we're looking for approval.
Thank you, Aaron. Any questions about either of these projects or the process that they came on through the call of projects? If not, the request is of the committee to approve these. Do I have a motion from anyone?
Sean, I'll motion.
Thank you, Sean. Do I have a second?
Matthew Bullock, I'll second.
Thank you, Matthew. Okay, all those in favor of approving this action? An aye?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
Just out of curiosity, real quick, the federal funding requested, does that include the local match, or is that just the federal dollars?
I will have to confirm on the applications, but I believe that is the funding, the federal piece requested. I will look at that when I get back to the office, and I can shoot you an email to confirm that, though.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. And then, speaking of TIP, we have modifications, Pam.
Yes, we've got some modifications that we processed, and this is for informational purposes. We had three that were requested us to process, two from NDOT. One of them was a bridge deck overlay contract. We added it to the TIP for preliminary engineering in 2023 and construction in 2024. The second was a bridge painting contract. We added that to the TIP for PE in 2023 and construction in 2025. And then we had a Henderson project, Wathen Lane. We added some more utility funding to that contract. It had some utility funding already approved, and the estimates were coming in higher than anticipated. So we added some additional utility funding to the TIP for that project.
Pam, you seeing, you said that, you know, bids came in a little high. Are you seeing that across the board?
Yes, the bids that have been coming in have been coming in higher. I imagine we've got a couple of people from NDOT that they can probably can confirm that too on their side. We're trying to adjust how we're coming up with the estimates, trying to come up with what's the best way to adjust those. So, but anybody from NDOT, if you had any feedback as well that you'd like to provide?
Yeah, I can speak up a little bit. We are seeing prices higher, and it's kind of tough to determine exactly what that is, if it's the time frame that we're putting on projects and contractors bidding in risk for that, or if it's actually the stuff that they have to order and everything. But we did get some good news from the executive staff. There is a trend for commodity prices to come back down, so that's, you know, cross your fingers, hopefully. But yes, it is definitely across the board.
Thank you. So that was informational. We have no other scheduled business. We do have create an opportunity for public comment if anyone would like to address the committee. Okay. Hearing none. Next meeting is November 10th. And we can stand adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Nate, you want me to set up a WebEx just to get in touch with you?